Hey everyone, welcome to the Winter Sessions overview call, Q&A, all of it today with Dana and Brent. Hey Dana, how are you doing?
How's it going? Doing all right.
Doing pretty good.
All right. Oh okay. Yeah.
It's exciting, wintertime.
Winter moment.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard because we talk about this a lot. You don't have winter so much right now, but because you're Baton Rouge. But Northern California, we just kicked into second winter. It's basically that, you know, that February long haul, you know, the East Coast and Canada, and this is the time of year we get a lot of rain, cold rain. But I know, Brent, I know the South. You're just...
The South.
The South. I know you get excited when it's 50. You know, that's your cold, right? Did you hit
cold.
Freezing this year? No.
I don't know if we ever touched freezing. If we did, it was like a little blip. It was actually abnormally warm this year, but we still had our cold. Still had our cold snaps.
Yeah.
Not as cold.
What's odd here is we actually had snow. Mark, did you know that we had snow? Tam had snow at some point.
I saw it.
There we are talking about the weather, but it's actually very appropriate because the winter sessions, we in all of the sessions, we loosely follow Chinese medicine. And in the winter, the winter time in Chinese medicine, there's a focus on nourishing the kidneys. And there's a lot of reasons why it's really appropriate this time of year. Some of you, we've got some people that have joined us already, and then we have some people that are considering joining us in this winter session. So hopefully you'll get some questions answered. We have some questions written in. So thank you for those. We'll go over those. And at the end, we can go over our session and how to join. This is we're starting week one today, so you haven't missed anything. We just had prep week. And we'd love to have you. So let's talk about the kidneys/adrenals. I love it. When you say adrenal fatigue, everybody raises their hands, right? It's like, uh-huh, me. And, you know, I want to talk today, Mark, a little bit about the kidney-adrenal connection. I always think it's fun and interesting how adrenal kidney, right? They really work together, right? The adrenals sit right on top of the kidneys. So I want to just go over some basic functionality of the kidney and adrenals. Can you just give us the top line? We know kidneys are there to filter. Why in the winter is it so important to really keep our kidneys healthy and quote-unquote, warm? Can we talk about that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think most people are aware of is that in Chinese medicine, you're looking at things from a different point of view. So I'm going to speak from a Western medical point of view that, remember, in the winter, we're always losing moisture, but we don't know it. And that's the weird thing for people is that they know it in the summer because they sweat and they feel their shirt is damp or whatever. But we have what's called non-sensible perspiration. And what people don't realize is when it's cold, you know, our body is shivering in micro shivers, not in levels. Some people are shivering outright. You, Dana, get very cold in the winter, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So
yes,
some people may not be as cold as you, but a lot of people with chronic disease like Lyme end up getting Raynaud's or they're very, very cold. And what you're going to do is, in many cases, you're going to lose so many minerals, you're going to sweat, but it's non-sensible. You can't feel it because it evaporates off your body, and you lose minerals. And we talked a lot about how when mineral loss goes, when we lose electrolytes or minerals, then your adrenals are going to start to fire. Your body's going to say, this is slightly dangerous. Nobody's going to die. This is slightly dangerous because for most of the people with chronic illness, they're going to probably even have low blood pressure. And so if you lose fluids and you lose electrolytes, you may feel lightheaded or dizzy. And a lot of the symptoms that I see with people with chronic Lyme are that they're cold all the time or they're cold more often than not. They get lightheaded if they get up from lying down quickly, and they might feel sort of woozy or out of it, and they don't get a lot of blood going to their brain. So one of the things we want to do is keep the body, you have emphasized this many times because of your reaction to cold. We've got to keep you warm so that you don't sweat away all your electrolytes. We've got to keep your blood pressure up, your total blood volume up. And then what people will feel is they'll feel like they have more brain power. They'll feel like they're not so lethargic. They'll feel like they can function better. And
you know,
that's
I'm hearing,
really important, especially, sorry?
It is very important. I'm hearing a lot of people on the call saying, wait, don't sweat. I'm in my sauna every single day. I got to sweat to get the heavy metals out. So sweating, very good.
Well, we want some
sweating.
Unless
you're depleted.
Yeah.
Unless you're depleted.
We want some sweating, and we also want to put back the minerals. That's the most important part, right? So I'm not
so
saying
talk
you
about
don't want
that.
To sweat.
So,
yeah.
That's right. So let's
Go
talk
ahead,
about,
Mary.
Let's say someone's already very depleted, and they feel like they need to detox, and they need to sweat. We've probably all experienced it. You go in to do a sauna, and you feel 100 times worse because you're basically now dehydrated. So everybody
is,
that does...
When you say 100 times worse, the one thing I want to remind people, because I have a lot of people that say this, it's like, oh, my heart speeds up. I have a regular heartbeat. I have this very fast heart. Well, when all of us lose blood volume, we're going to have to speed up our heart just to maintain the blood pressure. And so it's not that people have a heart problem. They just have lost too many electrolytes. Their total blood volume is down. Their fluid levels are down. Their salts are down, electrolyte salts. And suddenly their heart is working really, really hard. And along with that, you can get anxiety. You can't focus your brain. It's hard to do anything. And literally, you feel like you can't get off the couch or out of the bed. And that's why I don't want people sweating too much. But if they want to do saunas, then they just have to put it back. That's all. It's not a bad thing. You just rehydrate.
And you actually hydrate. You make sure you're hydrated before you go in, and a little bit during, and definitely after, correct?
Correct. Very much so.
Okay. You know, we want to talk about, you know, when I think of kidneys, what do the kidneys want? They want hydration. They're there to support your mineral balance and filter the waste. So let's talk about hydration, because, you know, how do we get hydrated? There's some crazy statistic. It's like most of us are dehydrated in this country,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep,
our lifestyle, our diet, you know, the fast pace. So hydration is not just water, it's obviously electrolytes. So can we talk about
mm-hmm.
some of the problems? If you're just drinking water, you're kind of flushing away your minerals, and that can be even more problematic.
Well, that's exactly the problem, is that we all know people that have drunk a lot of water, and they feel very lightheaded, and they don't feel very good, and they add something like, and I'm not selling a product, I'm just telling you, add a pinch of Himalayan salt to the water, and suddenly they feel like, oh my God, I'm not so wiped out. Now, another way that shows up for women in particular, since there are a lot of women on this call, is that you might have urinary urgency or incontinence. And when your mineral levels get too low, it'll feel like as soon as you drink, you have to pee. And that can be very disconcerting when someone says, when I cough, when I sneeze, when I step off the curb, oh my God, I can't control it. And that's when your electrolytes are, that's an example of when your electrolytes are low. I mean, they could be low for other reasons, but that's one example of how it shows up. And that's why I say to people, if you keep the salts in there a little bit, and we've had lots of conversations about why good salt is different than traditional salt that people think of as Morton's, when it rains, it pours, then people feel better. They have a little more energy. They don't feel as depleted. And more importantly, they're going to feel a little bit warmer. Because if you just drink tons of water, even if you're drinking warm water, you'll end up feeling colder. When the electrolytes go down, then our temperature drops. And for all of the people that are listening, I think one of the most difficult things is when you're cold on a regular basis, your body expends a lot of energy trying to maintain temperature. You will burn a lot of calories, not helping repair your body, just to try and keep yourself from shivering.
And we've talked about this before, when you're in that cold place, always cold, the anxiety and fear that goes with it, it just, they kind of go together, because there's something about obviously warmth and having your hydration and feeling calm. I mean, it really, I can speak to this. Now, let's talk about how when someone's cold and they have low blood pressure, right? So having some Himalayan salt in the water, it's something we recommend, a pinch of Himalayan salt. Again, Mark, I'm going to say, as you said, Himalayan salt has, what, 88 trace minerals in it, including all the electrolytes, sodium, potassium, calcium, magnesium, et cetera.
It's got macro and micronutrients.
And the micronutrients as well, minerals. And so so people get really afraid, like, oh, I can't have salt because I have high blood pressure. So that's something, you know, because some people on this call run very hot. So this is something we talk about a lot in our sessions, how to manage your temperature and why that's important. Being too hot is exhausting as well, right?
Correct.
So people that run hot tend to have higher blood pressure. So would you say, because we've already had this question, I'll just skip to that question, what should I do if I have high blood pressure? Should I attempt the Himalayan salt?
It always works because, again, we're not talking sodium chloride with iodine.
Yep.
That's when most salt is sodium chloride. And then they add a little iodine to prevent goiter. Well, that's three minerals compared to 88. So we find that if people are doing a pinch of Himalayan salt in their water, maybe in every quart of water, every water bottle that they have, they will not only get high blood pressure, but if you use the book on your body's many cries for water, one of the things he talks about is reducing high blood pressure by increasing water. And it works every time.
I know.
So
I love that book. He talks
water
about how
a little bit of salt will always work. You'll reduce it.
Right, because he breaks it down, and it's not a new thing, but he says that high blood pressure is dehydration, right? And they give you diuretics to get rid, because you're holding on to water because you're dehydrated.
Right. Your body is reacting. Yeah.
Your body's like trying to survive.
More.
Yeah. So getting appropriate water with electrolytes hydrates you. So the salt is the Himalayan salt is just, it's quick. I feel it's really absorbed. But we know that the best electrolytes on the planet really is fruit. I mean, fruit is incredible. It's got structured water and some vegetables. But fruit this time of year, again, if you're cold, is not always appropriate.
It'll make you colder.
And,
yeah.
Make you colder because the high potassium, very cleansing. We love fruit. We do an entire celebration of fruit in the summer when the sun is high and hot. So your body doesn't have to try to warm itself up. But I just want to be clear that, you know, fruit and vegetables, incredible for hydration. And something we talk about, Mark, is not just adding things like, okay, water, a pinch of salt, fruit and veg. What about the behaviors that are dehydrating? Those are just as important to avoid, the dehydrating behavior.
I think they're more important because nowadays I don't have to tell people to drink water. I just have to tell them to add a little bit of salt. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I have to go through, and here's, I have a simple answer to all the dehydrating things. If you can't juice it, then it's going to be dehydrating. So you can't juice a steak, and I eat more paleo, and I'm not telling you to do that. And you can't juice, you can juice a potato, but it's, you know, if you have a fried potato, trust me, you don't want to juice it. So the only thing you can really juice and get anything out of are fruits and vegetables. Because everybody nowadays, a lot of people tell me things like, and everything, the word organic starts out with everything. And I go, organic doesn't mean anything, because if you're having organic nuts and seeds and organic popcorn, those things will dry you out immensely. And everybody's like, but I'm having nuts and seeds, and they have zinc, and they have other minerals. And it's like, yeah, but they're bone dry. And so you're right, Dana. People just don't realize that most of their food, if I would say 60 to 70% of your diet should be fruits and vegetables without spices that are drying, like black pepper, et cetera. So how many people are eating 60 to 70% of their diet fresh fruits and vegetables? And they can cook them. Fresh does not mean raw. Most people aren't.
Well, I
then
know one person.
Thing,
she's in our session, Terry Walls.
Yeah.
And
and that changed her life, right?
Terry Walls, Dr. Terry Walls. She's such a great woman. She had MS. She was declining rapidly. She was taking all the medicine, all the drugs, and she just realized, wait a second, and then she started supplements. And she said, wait a minute, why can't I get all this from food? It's so much better absorbed. And she came up with this, the Walls Protocol, which includes daily 9 cups of fruits and vegetables. So that's something we're moving into next week. We're not asking you to do 9 cups of fruits and vegetables. That's a huge gap, but moving up to at least 4. And that's really fun. I hope we can support each other in that next week. And Terry Walls, she reversed, you know, she reversed her MS. Incredible. And she has a huge following now of people that do her protocol. And I want to just mention quickly here about the fruit and veg. We know that across the board, every single diet, we can't really disagree with that, although there's some fruitarians that don't like vegetables. But the meat, we're not going to get into that. But I just want to be clear, in the Walls Protocol, she talks about very small portions of meat. Now, I've been in and out of meat eater to vegan mostly last year, and I think we always have to feel into our body, feel into your heart and whatever morally you're comfortable with. But much smaller amounts. I mean, I tried to go big paleo girl at some point, and man, I tried to eat the meat to recover, and I developed SIBO, and it just, if you're not breaking it down, it's not working, right? So this is something we talk about in the session about taking appropriate digestive enzymes, eating appropriate portions, you know, fat, the big rage with fat, the ketogenic diet can be very, very helpful. Klinghart says it's one of the best diets there is for 6 months. And then he says it starts having the opposite kind of effect. So where we net out here, where I net out, is just somewhere down the middle. And if you're going to go extreme, please always, always work with a practitioner. Just don't try to do this stuff on your own. It's really important. But I will get to fats a little bit later when we start talking about becoming highly sensitive in the world. And I got very happy when I put that email out about being basically allergic to the modern world. I got a lot of response from that, so I'm excited to start talking about that. So let's go. We talked a little bit about kidneys. Okay, so the adrenals, the little adrenals on top of the kidneys. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of talk today about adrenal fatigue. Again, modern life, we're at a very fast pace. We have a lot of stress. You know, we tend to go into a fight or flight mode over the littlest things, right? Traffic, relationships, work. This is a kind of incredible mechanism our body has in a dangerous situation, right? And it just, it's incredible the power you get when you go into fight or flight, and the adrenaline and all the stress hormones. And it's just like rally the troops, like fire the alarms off, everybody out, you know. And it's incredible. You know, women, we've talked about this, women can lift cars in a dangerous situation. You just get this incredible power. But what happens afterwards, the depletion is incredible. You have to rebuild. And we don't ever have that time to rebuild. We're in a constant state of reaction and upset. So, yes, of course, we're adrenally fatigued because they're squeezing. We're squeezing our little adrenals for cortisol and adrenaline daily. And, Mark, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, adrenal function in people that are chronically ill. So beyond the daily stress, when you're fighting infections, your adrenals are on high alert. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you outlined it really well. I don't know what I can add. I would just add a couple of pieces. remember the adrenals, when you're doing things correctly, you're going to hopefully reabsorb some of the electrolytes, but when we're putting out a lot of epinephrine and norepinephrine, we're going to end up depleting our electrolytes. So with the reaction to running a lot of adrenaline, is we're going to put out hormones that are going to be doing harm. They're catabolic. They are important, and catabolic does not mean you'll die. I'm not saying anything that dire, but we need adrenals to kick us into gear when there's a real emergency. However, what you were talking about, and I think you're alluding to, is that people have lots of sort of emergencies, but then really what happens is your adrenals get into a hyper state where they fire on the text, the phone call, even the ringing of the phone. And so after a while, mm-hmm. the adrenals just keep firing regardless of the intensity of the stress. They fire, and when that causes you to lose your electrolytes, when you get those catabolic hormones going through you, then you're going to need to replace them much more quickly. And the problem is that when we get this cycle going, that it's hard to break. That's what we're all having a hard time.
Right. And when you're dealing with infections, your body's kind of in this state of alert. So your adrenals are automatically on alert. And it's not to say that it's obviously very healthy. The cortisol is part of a healthy body. It's just that when we're in this constant state of squeezing for cortisol and then adrenaline and et cetera, it's exhausting. So I want to
It's exhausting because you're going to pull down all your reserves to cover whatever the emergency is. And so what happens is, I would like to refer, this is an easy way to refer people to it. We're either building or tearing down. And if we're building, we can hopefully put nuts back for the winter like the squirrels do. We can build energy into our body. If we build energy into our body, when we do hit a real panic, a real adrenal stress, we have a reserve account to get to. But like your life lately has been so difficult that you've depleted your adrenals. Your adrenals are firing all the time. You've depleted your reserve account because you just don't stop pulling on it. And eventually that can cause some pretty severe difficulties for people because your reserves are completely depleted. You want to address that in a practical way, Dana?
Yeah, no, that's what I want to move on to next about becoming sensitive in the world and how your reserves are totally depleted. And as you said, the last 4 years of my life have been top-level stress, having my own health issues and trying to take care of my autistic brother who's 53, who's out in the world homeless. It's just some of the top-level stress a person can deal with. But it's interesting, as a side note, I'm also the perfect person to deal with it because I know what it's like to be chronically ill. That's, and I want to just put my arms around all the people that are chronically ill themselves and taking care of a sick loved one. That happens quite often, because we have the heart for it. We get it. But I want to say something about the reserve account. It's like there's the reserve account and then going way into debt, just like borrowing.
Yeah.
And I want to just bring up here, let's just go over quickly, let's say insulin. One of the things that you've taught me over the years is that your adrenals, what your adrenals want, is consistency. And that looks like sleep. Sleep is actually a treatment for adrenal fatigue. And easier said than done, right? But
correct.
The other one is consistent blood sugar levels. So let's talk about, when you eat and you eat something, carbs break down into glucose, insulin is used to get the glucose into the cell. So insulin is secreted to bring the blood sugar down into a normal range. Cortisol, on the other hand, is used to bring the blood sugar up when it's dropped too low. And that's a kind of a chronic situation with adrenal fatigue, right? So you're in a loop. So when your blood sugar is too low, you haven't eaten. A lot of us are guilty of it. I'm totally guilty of it. When we're stressed out, we're not eating enough. So then your body says, okay, I need to bring your blood sugar up. So I'm just going to use whatever's around. I'm going to start breaking down your tissue to use for protein and whatever fats I can break down. So you're actually eating yourself. It's so disgusting, but it's like someone said,
your own
yeah,
tissue,
I know, but
is...
it's like I'm trying to give the cartoon version of it just so you can see. It's like you're catabolizing, and it's really, and then pain. Oh, pain goes crazy, right? Because
pain is going to be out of control once you do that.
Right, and I
remember those hormones you're talking about are highly inflammatory. They're extremely inflammatory. So you're going to feel inflammation everywhere throughout your body. It can be systemic or local, depending on what the person has as a history.
And what I notice, as soon as I've figured out how to eat more regularly, the pain diminishes because it's not in that breakdown scenario, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like over these years, you mentioned the phone call, like I started having trauma over the certain ring of my phone in the middle of the night, and I would get just heart palpitations, just hearing mm-hmm. the ring of the phone, worried about my brother and whatever's next, so then there's the level of adrenaline, again, a total gift to us and a miracle when we need it. But as I understand it, adrenaline, if we talk about cortisol being catabolic, adrenaline, as Anthony William puts it, he says it adrenaline pickles your liver.
That's a good way to describe it.
Just imagine the acidity. It pickles your liver. So it's just that beautiful kind of rush you get. And I've mm-hmm. been actually addicted to adrenaline to like function. And I remember,
well,
Mark, a few times. Go ahead.
Here's what I would say, and I think you're addressing it, and people need to hear this. People do become addicted to that kind of energy, because when you don't have it, you probably feel flat, lifeless, no energy. So when adrenaline courses through you, it starts to set up this feedback loop that I'm going to tell you is negative, but it feels good, because otherwise you're just flat on the couch, not able to do anything, feeling like you're ready to just not, you can't move. And then you get the fight or flight. You get the adrenaline, and because you're so used to that version of it, there's two kinds of energy. There's real energy and that kind of energy. And so your brother has a need, which is a very real need, and you have to jump into gear. And even though right 10 minutes before you were lifeless, now you suddenly have a burst of energy. Your brain is working really well. You can get off the couch. You can go do all this stuff. You do heroic things, and I've seen you do it. And then at the end of that, what happens? You fall apart.
Dead.
Because now you've drained every reserve account that you ever thought you had. Bones, teeth, hair, skin, nails, muscles. That's catabolic.
That's catabolic, and it's pulling all the minerals from every, yeah. I love that we're bringing this up, because it does, at one point you said, you're an adrenaline junkie. And it's interesting. I've noticed almost my whole life I've been a procrastinator. And what I know what I'm doing is waiting for energy, right? Waiting
adrenaline.
For stress, right? And I watched my brother do it. I watched it's coming from a family of totally flattened adrenals. So we have to squeeze them to get things done, and then it's absolutely heroic. I mean,
right.
I can get things done in the shortest amount of time, but I remember a few times I was on a trip somewhere, Mark, and I said, I don't know. It's like, I'm winning. I did it. I feel great. And I remember coming mm-hmm. home on the airporter, and I'm like, wow, I'm better. I'm feeling so great. It was just such a crazy day. I'm like, I'm strong. I got home. It was 5 days. Five days just completely under. So I love that we're bringing this up. Adrenaline is not a good source of energy.
Here we're addressing something else. Anyone with a chronic disease like Lyme or any chronic disease has been running on adrenaline. That's the only way they can run. That's why one of the biggest complaints you're going to hear about is brain fog, exhaustion beyond belief, inability, even if they want to cook food and they want to eat food, they have no energy to do it. But they somehow pull it together when their kids are in trouble, their husband's in trouble. And then they say, I pull it together, but then I'm wiped out for days. And I go, yeah, I understand that. That's why we have to break that cycle. This cycle is really destructive to everyone.
Well,
and
I
think it's a cycle that's in all of life in the United States right now. You've emphasized that resting, true resting, true parasympathetic is one of the places we have to go to.
Yeah, I want to get to that. I just want to add that the adrenaline response, it doesn't have to be a bad thing. You know, we hear a lot of our members talk about, oh, I had my grandson's birthday party and it was pure joy, right? It was just so exciting, family and cooking and all that, and just the same thing. A couple of days of just completely flat out. So it can be joyous adrenaline too, right? It can be a joyous occasion. So really what we're looking for is consistency and kind of working down the middle to heal. And I just want to, let's go over a little bit. So the kidneys, if you think about your kidneys want hydration with electrolytes, warmth.
And warmth.
And warmth. That's, there's actually kidney warmers that you can wrap around your kidneys in the winter.
It's a Hara belt. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a Hara belt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and they're really, really smart, and they're actually very comforting in terms of anxiety. And your adrenals, if we break that down, your adrenals want consistency. So consistent blood sugar, consistent rest. Now, it gets kind of crazy with adrenal fatigue. Somebody asked, how do I know what symptoms are adrenal fatigue and what's other things? I'm like, you know when you cannot lift your head up. It's crushing fatigue. So it's not just a light situation. I mean, adrenal exhaustion is, you can hardly move around. I've been through it. I know the hair analysis, Mark. I know a lot of people are testing that way. But what I want to say, what's interesting, once your adrenals are at that state, there's this mysterious thing that happens where exhaustion happens all day, brain fog all day long, and then somewhere around 5 o'clock, the lights come on, and then it's like wide awake at night. It's called the cortisol flip, where you're supposed to have high levels of cortisol in the morning to get you through, but it's flipped. So you get sort of a surge at night, and then you tend to stay up too late. You get the second wind. Mm-hmm. Go to bed too late. So we know these things.
It changes your appetite too, because then you're going to remember when you've got that going, carbs are going to be your favorite friend.
Yeah, yeah, and it takes quite a bit of discipline. I'm trying myself to. We know that going to bed before 10 o'clock is ideal, but by 10 o'clock or 10:30 max, that doesn't happen for me. But one of the things that's really interesting is this sleep window between 7 and 9 is when your cortisol goes up. And if you don't get up and use it, you kind of bank it a little bit. So maybe Google that, guys. It's a really interesting, because I was in a cycle where I'd stay up from, you know, 3 to 6, and then I'd sleep 7 to 9, and I was rested. So and I remember reading that in the adrenal fatigue book, and I was like, oh my gosh, now I know why, that magical window. And again, if you are experiencing adrenal fatigue, don't book anything in the morning. Give yourself that window, you know, to sleep. Sleep is the treatment, the main treatment. And the other treatment for adrenal fatigue and kidneys is managing fear. So, Mark, it's no question why in Chinese medicine they talk about the emotion associated with adrenals and kidneys is fear. And we just looked at that picture, right? Makes perfect sense.
Just described
those, it. Right, those organs react in fear situations. So now I want to talk about some...
Most of us know when we're afraid. One of the indicators could be we would sweat profusely. Not everybody does it, but a lot of people when I ask them if they sweat, they say, no, I don't. That means they're really dehydrated. But if you do have enough hydration and you experience fear, you'll probably be dripping with sweat. Your underarms will be perspiring. That's just a reaction to the catabolic hormones. It is normal. It's not a bad thing. So whatever works for the person to correct that is important.
Absolutely. And I just want to add, I just remembered that another interesting sign of adrenal kidney weakness and fatigue is the urgency, like you said, Mark, but it's mm-hmm. not just chronic urgency. For example, when I've had to go be with my brother in some really intense situations, whether it's the jail, whatever it is, just way too heavy for me, really intense court, whatever, I cannot stop peeing. The fear,
mm-hmm.
I just start losing water. And the treatment that you told me, you know, I call you and say, I don't understand. I'm sorry to be graphic,
you're peeing,
you guys,
uncontrollably.
But
yeah.
Peeing uncontrollably, like, oh my gosh, is there any fluid left in my body? Very scary. And
mm-hmm.
you're like, pinch of salt, trace minerals, kind of constantly having a little pinch of salt in my mouth, and it works. Incredible.
Well, and I'm going to say this because there's probably a lot of women out there that have delivered babies, and I have not found hardly one woman that's delivered a baby vaginally that doesn't have some urinary incontinence or urgency. And I'm going to say the first thing they got to do is take care of, when it's a difficult birth, it is obviously stressful. I'm not saying it isn't. But a lot of women, I have women 10 and 20 years later that are still incontinent or urgent, and I'm going, start with salt. Just start with a pinch of salt and see if that brings it down a little. You may need other kinds of interventions, and there are many. But you think of how many mothers there are out there, and they're just living with this, and it's driving them crazy. And it makes them really
right.
cold. It's the same thing. They're dealing with the
cold,
same problems.
Yeah. I want to say that.
How often do we see, you know, the man and the woman in the car, and the man's got the window down, and he wants the air conditioning on, and the woman is sitting there freezing, and she's got layers on, and she wants the window up, and she wants the heat on. This is just, now, there are always exceptions. I know there are. There's going to be people in menopause. There's people with chronic inflammation because of infections. But generally, the women are much colder.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about, before I forget, somebody posted on Facebook, and I need to respond, about a drink that I've made for this session. I want to talk about, you know, back to the electrolytes thing and food. I made a drink of dates. Oh, my God, sugar, help. Dates,
yep.
Celery. Okay, the dates loaded with potassium, loaded with minerals. Celery loaded with the right kind of sodium. Now, this is the
mm-hmm.
organic version, so you can obviously absorb minerals through food very well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So date, celery, lemon, and a pinch of salt. It's the electrolyte drink. So
yeah.
I'm glad. Yeah, and it's delicious.
And people feel restored. That's what you're talking about.
It's like
a
Gatorade.
Comes back. Yes.
Right.
It doesn't cost you
Gatorade.
Anything. It's a healthy
and it
Gatorade.
It doesn't affect my blood sugar. You know, I can have a whole talk someday on dates. And I eat 3 dates in the morning with some kind of seed butter and some salt. And it doesn't move my blood sugar. If I have too much fat, my blood sugar is all over the place. So we're all different. But I will say dates, if you are a exhausted person in the world, dates, I would do some research. They are incredible.
I'd like to add that I think is really important. There are actually two things. One is, if people are doing everything you're talking about, their bowels will normalize. So a lot of people, when they get dehydrated, they don't realize it, but they get a little more constipated or bloated. If they're doing all the things we're talking about, they'll eliminate more because they're going to rehydrate their colon and their stool will get much easier. So there's that. And then the other thing is, when you have these catabolic hormones going through, your zinc ratios drop. And when you're along with other minerals, and when that drops, then your copper that's in the water in the pipes everywhere can start to go up. And I think
that's what we're going to talk about next.
How that, yeah. Okay.
That's that's the good
well,
stuff.
I didn't see that.
Yes.
It's obvious. So I'm glad you.
No,
brought
it is obvious. No, because it's really something important we need to talk about in this next part of this talk. Let's see. Wow, 12:42. I wanted to keep this at an hour. I'm not sure it's going to end there, but you guys can always listen to the recording. So one of the things I said in the email was, you know, how do we become so sensitized to this modern world? Now, number one, it's a toxic world, the obvious, right? there's more pollution than ever. Our food is corrupted. Our water's corrupted. The chemicals are everywhere. Freaking dryer sheets can ruin your day. Personally, drives me crazy. So that's the obvious picture that we're dealing with. But it gets very confusing. Why are some people thriving? What is it? How can I sit next to someone that is drinking a Diet Coke, smells like laundry, laughing their heads off? They drank last night. It's confusing. So let's talk about the breakdown and why we become so sensitive. We become canaries in the world. And I want to say, P.S., being a canary, I am one, is a gift that we have to use wisely. So, Mark, you talk a lot about a person's history. Obviously, very mm-hmm. important to determine the function of your organs, the status of your tissue and your nerves, etc. Mm-hmm. The stress and trauma a person has gone through. I want to just mention a lot of people, a huge percentage of people, have had trauma, emotional or physical, or both, before getting Lyme and all the others, right? When I say Lyme,
completely.
I mean everything. I mean Epstein-Barr, mm-hmm. mold, blah, 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 blah. Okay.
Yep.
So it's this the trauma, and then it's this also this accumulation of toxins. Like some people just had poor habits, innocently mm-hmm. just had poor habits. So there's a lot of ways we got here. But I think it's very interesting to look at what stress does. We started kind of set up this picture here of what stress does. Now let's just imagine you are someone that had trauma, hard upbringing, many traumas in your life. Your nervous system is shot. You developed mm-hmm. Infections because your immune system was tanked. It would be, mm-hmm. right?
Correct.
So, and then you add stress to that. Okay, so let's look at that picture of what happens. I really want to like narrow it down to the visual of, so here you are with these infections. You're, like you just said, Mark, your minerals are kind of way out of whack. So when you stress, your immune system goes down. The bugs, whatever, let's say you had a good 6 months. And that's, I'll use myself as an example. I was doing well. I treated for many years and I was doing well. And then I had a fender bender. Then I moved and it was a cascade. And then it was this helping my brother for 4 years. Now I've just completely dropped and the bugs start coming back. Now we're never going to get rid of these bugs entirely, right? That's not a new statement, is it?
Nope,
meaning
that's not a new statement at all.
Epstein-Barr, herpetic virus, they're everywhere. And it's mm-hmm. all about how you're controlling it. So stress makes the bugs grow, depletes the minerals, right? And mm-hmm. then it throws off the minerals like zinc you were just talking about. And many of us with Lyme have KPU, where we lose zinc every day. It's kind of mm-hmm. why we're in this situation to begin with, losing zinc, and zinc is critical to your immune system. But if you're losing zinc, let's talk about this ratio situation where zinc and copper share a receptor, and if you don't getting enough zinc because our food is depleted, we know that, and then we have so much copper in our pipes. So let's talk about copper toxicity and what happens there. We know we become conductive to EMFs. That's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone is deficient in zinc and or other minerals and they become copper toxic, what have you seen besides anxiety and...
Well, copper toxicity is probably one of the most common and underdiagnosed things that I see in anyone. And the only way to really find it out, I mean, I muscle test people and I can tell you that, But for people that want a hard number, you have to do a hair analysis, and it has to be very specific. I'm going to always recommend analytical research. And when I do that with people, we only charge them for the cost of what they charge us, because it's just data to help people figure out where they are in terms of zinc copper ratios. So when your copper levels get high, I think the biggest thing you've alluded to is the EMF sensitivity, which is then going to fire off your adrenal. It's going to fire off the whole cycle again that we've all been talking about. But also you're going to find all kinds of neurological things that maybe don't look like anxiety. You know, you could have misophonia, be sensitive to noise. You can have light sensitivity. Your nervous system will be upregulated in a way that is not healthy. So now, regardless, let's say your life settled down. Let's say you have, you know, all the problems went away. But if you have a high level of copper, your nervous system is still upregulated, and you have to be very extremely careful about not trying to just chelate copper out, because if you look this up, you'll see that if you try and pull copper out too fast, it will kill, it says necrose, your gallbladder. So I always tell people, you have to slowly get healthy zinc in there. You have to make sure your stomach will absorb it. Your hydrochloric acid is there. The compatible minerals are there. Then you can slowly push the copper out and push the zinc into the receptor sites. And so zinc ratios are always down. And the cheap, easy way to find that out for people that don't want to spend for a hair analysis is just get a zinc tally, T-A-L-L-Y, tally taste test. And you put a couple drops of zinc on your tongue. It's going to be really cheap. I think it's 10 or 12 bucks for it. And if you can't taste that metallic taste, then you know you're low in zinc. Now, I know I've taught chiropractors that when I'm in a room with 40 chiropractors and I say, how many of you take zinc? They all do, because they know it's good for them. I pass around the zinc taste test and 1 out of 40 will taste it. And these people have been taking it for a year, 2, 3, 4 years. And I'm going, okay, it's not what you take, it's what you absorb and what goes on the receptor site. So it's really important that you not just consume it, but you have to make sure it's absorbed, and then you have to find a way to exchange it so that the copper comes off the site and the good zinc goes there. But remember, every time you have a wound healing and repair, every time you're in fight or flight, your body demands zinc. So you have to put it in daily. You have to make sure the receptors are uptaking it, and you have to make sure they're not loaded with copper. Otherwise, you will not ever get out of it.
So to me, one of the greatest ways to get zinc is food. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of vegetables and fruits that have high zinc. Pumpkin seeds do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the reasons people end up eating more animal protein. You know, beef has a high level of zinc, certain seafoods and stuff like that. Now, it doesn't even matter if you can't digest it. And so really what the key here is that HCL, because, you know, HCL is so interesting, the hydrochloric acid. It helps you to break down proteins, but it helps mm-hmm. to absorb minerals. People don't talk enough about that, how you need HCL to be able to absorb your minerals. You know, Anthony William is really preaching this celery juice as a way to get your HCL functioning again. And what's interesting in that is celery has that bioorganic sodium. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about this in our session a little bit, how to promote HCL. There's obviously you can use bitters. Some people can use apple cider vinegar. But yeah, I mean, the zinc, you know, vegans and vegetarians, you have to supplement with it. You just have to.
Mm-hmm.
Fruits and vegetables can be really high in copper. It's the good copper, but still
mm-hmm.
There's the ratio there. So, yeah, I just, you know, I just feel kind of overwhelmed for everybody, you know, like the canaries out there, because, you know, I know what it's like. And I've always been very sensitive being, even as a child. You know, we're sensitive to everything, to the environment, to people's emotions, empathetic, et cetera. But, you know, the world can get to be a really scary, overwhelming place. And I really want to be a voice to help people to not go down that road, because it almost turns into an OCD. Do you see what I'm saying? It's like the fear, and it's justified. For example, again, I'll bring up a dryer sheet, you know, dryer sheets on someone's clothes. You know, you're having a good day, you've eaten well, you're hydrated, and you get hit in the face with a laundry scent, and it's an instant migraine. It's an instant sinus problem. Lymph fills up. It's like they just knocked you back three steps. So it's very frustrating to live with it, because we're constantly, it's like a video game. We're moving forward and then we get knocked back 10 steps. So I think the most important thing I want to share with people is to not go into fear and to not go into anger, not for long. For example, if you walk into a place and it's moldy. I got to tell this story. I went to see A Star Is Born, and I was so excited. I walked in, the music was playing. I was thrilled. I don't ever go to movies. I sat down, and I got hit with a wall of mold. And I had to make that decision. Finish this movie because I'm so happy and joy right now, or run away from the mold. And I made the decision to stay, and I covered my face the whole time. And by the end of it, my throat was burning, my sinuses were burning, my lymph was filling up. And I just went home and I said, you know what, it was worth it. And I took all the things I know. So I want people to know that their bodies can recover quickly. Is that fair to say, Mark, when you have...
Mm-hmm. That is fair.
When you... You know,
what you're talking about is learning how to rebalance. Yeah. Whatever, everybody's going to rebalance in a different way. But if you know the things that affect you, whether it's mold or EMS or whether it's dehydration, then you have to also have a set of tools, whatever tools work for you, which could be just increasing your water, having your Himalayan salt, having more fruits and vegetables, taking the time to do a little breath work, you know, going for a walk and getting your cross crawl refired. There's so many things. So I would like people to have joy in their life, because what does joy contradict? Fear.
Right.
So however, if you had more joy being in that movie theater, then that started to give you something that we can't give you with food. We can't give you with supplements. And everybody needs joy.
That's it. So I, you know, there I was having a physical reaction, but I was experiencing joy at the same time. So it wasn't as bad. And, you know, I have so much to say on this, and I've literally written pages, but I've been so compromised in my brain lately that I'm trying to put it together for you guys. But I reached a tipping point recently, and it's, you know, everything I just mentioned about the 4 years helping my brother, well, he ended up being put into solitary confinement for 32 days, and he's autistic and he can't handle it, and he's eating only peanuts, and it was daily stress beyond imagination for me. And I kept like meeting the challenge. And what's happened is, you know, it was an entire month, and then shortly after it's resolved, I fell apart. And where I was managing some sensitivities, like I could handle a little bit of mold, I could handle this or that, I've become incredibly sensitive. And the top thing that I cannot deal with right now is EMFs. And I want to share this with you because I didn't realize how much the EMFs were ruining my life in a way, because here's the thing. Going out in the world and having stress, if you have to work, you have kids, you have to be on during the day. But to go home at night and not be able to have a sanctuary to sleep in and give your nervous system and brain a chance to repair, you're screwed, right? So I've always felt really sick on the cell phone. I'll tell you right now, I'm calling you in on this on Skype. So I would encourage everybody to buy Skype credits. This is now how I'm making my calls. My computer, laptop is hardwired. I have broken up with my cell phone. We used to have a love affair, but I cannot do it anymore. I've never been able to be on a call on the cell phone because I get my thyroid burns. And did you guys know that heavy metals accumulate in the thyroid, so that's a reason why it would burn. My scalp would burn, and I get complete brain fog, and my vision would go. So it's very real. But I want to share, too, that I was feeling this. I would walk into my apartment, and I just literally just fall apart. Okay, I come inside, I'm like, why do I feel so awful in here? I had it tested for mold. I thought there must be a chemical, there must be something. I got the best air purifiers. And still, Mark, I remember telling you, I'd walk out of my door and I'd feel 30% better. Just stepping out the door, I'm like, what is happening here? There's got to be something. So long story short, with all the talk about 5G and everything, I had a survey. I took my meter out and I checked my apartment. I had checked it when I moved in 4 years ago. Well, things change, right? Neighbors move in, and it is off the charts, okay, for microwave radiation. Now, that's my one meter. I ended up having a consultant come in just to verify what I already knew. And she where I sit every single day, they want it to be under 100 for a healthy person. It's 100 microwatts mm-hmm. per square centimeter. Sorry if this is too much information, guys, but it's important. Under 100. Where I was sitting was 5,800, almost 6,000, up to 8,000 microwatts per square centimeter. Okay? Now that was coming from the downstairs router and then a cell tower nearby. And then the bedroom, again, under 100. My bed was at 3,400. So waking up in the night with tachycardia, having POTS symptoms, I developed apnea, okay, just blurred vision. And, you know, it's so interesting, Mark, that all of these symptoms can be traced back to Lyme and Epstein-Barr and heavy metals, but the EMFs light it up, right? It's such an invisible burden that it lights up all the symptoms. It, you know, the heavy metals, it makes mold, as Klinghart talks about. When you have mold in your body and you come in contact with a microwave radiation, the mold feels it and puts out a toxin to protect itself. Did you follow that?
That was accurate.
Is that so interesting? So it's a living being, and it feels something, and it puts out a toxin. So needless to say, EMFs are a deal breaker for us. EMFs, mold, chemicals, however you can avoid those. Now, it's really hard because a lot of us can't just get up and move. We don't have the finances, and that's what I want to say. Just start where you are. Do what you can. And so I will put some of this together and I'll tell you some of the things that I'm doing. One thing I discovered in my apartment was a safe zone. I would encourage you to get a meter of your own, but I discovered a safe zone, and it happens to be next to the oven in the kitchen. So I've been sleeping on the kitchen floor. And for the last week, I've been able to sleep through the night, first time in probably 10 years. So it's a really big deal, but I also want to encourage people not to go into fear, right? Because, again, if I start thinking about all the wireless and the EMS, I will go crazy, right? And then you see a lot of people moving to the desert. And, Mark, we've talked about this. It's not necessarily a solution because there's other variables. Do you want to talk about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of variables, and what people don't realize is there's different molds in the desert too. So it's like people say, oh, I'm going to go to a dry environment. There's different kinds of molds. Some live in a dry environment, some live in a damp environment. So that's number one. The temperature can fluctuate extremely, as we've talked about it around here, because I know people in the desert, and it can get extremely cold at night. So you really have high fluctuation. Anyone with a chronic disease like Lyme you said consistency in everything. So if your temperature varies 40 degrees between morning and the bright of day, that's a big that's a variable that puts a stress or a load on the body. So I think that it's good to have more temperate environments if you can. There's people living in environments that are horrible, and I can't tell them that they can do much about that, but they try and make their house or their environment as clean as possible and as temperate as they can.
Or keeping your body warm with the right layers. And, you know, I sleep under, it's really funny, I sleep under 30 pounds. I have two comforters and a weighted blanket. And that's how much I need to feel comfortable and fall asleep. I mean,
that's fine.
So yeah,
that's a way of protecting you in your environment.
That's right. And it's whatever way you can comfort yourself, and that it really works. It works for me. You know, I will say, cause I know there's a lot of people on this, that my husband gets it and doesn't get it. And we live in this apartment, and it can be really hard. You know, it can be hard on the person living with you because they don't get it. And, you know, it's also helped me to not go into making my sensitivities my identity 100%. And I think that's really important, Mark. And I want to talk about this too, about, you know, our nervous systems are so brilliant and so in tune. So what we're reacting to is correct. You know, feeling EMFs and not feeling good, that's correct. Going into a room and knowing there's mold, that's correct. Reacting to dryer sheets or some chemical, it's correct. But it's what happens next, how we not go into that cascade of fear. Because as we've said in this whole call, as soon as we go into fear, the adrenaline bath happens and the symptoms get 10 times worse. And there's a lot of beautiful work being done around this right now. Dynamic neural repatterning is one of them. I've never done it, but I do my own version of just staying really present. Like, let's say, for example, I get hit with a chemical or perfume, whatever it is, I come up across it, I put my hand on my heart and I go, good job. I talk to my Mark, I think you'll appreciate this, because I talk to my nervous system like a dog, right? So the dog is barking, which is correct. And then, good job, we're safe. Like, you put your hand on your heart, good job, we're safe now. Mm-hmm. Because is this correct? This is what I've self-taught myself, because going into fear and anger makes it so much worse, and it's paralyzing. You can't even think what to do next. So I'm just loving everybody that's going through it, and I want to help on this level. I don't want to make it an identity, but I want us to celebrate the idea that we have a sensitivity that's a gift. If I'm honest, I think canary should be revered, right? Mm-hmm. In the family, like, Dana said it's not good, we should do something. That would be the correct version of this, but unfortunately it doesn't happen like that. So again, I think staying out of the fear, and Mark, something you talked about is when the nervous system freezes, okay, so there's flight, fight, flight, and freeze.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk a little bit about when the nervous system freezes in this context where we kind of get stuck in a mode?
Well, what happens, I like the work of Stephen Porges, and I know Stephen personally, and I think he's done a really good job. And he's talking about, you know, it's another version. We always talk fight or flight, but when you freeze, things lock up at a lot of levels. They lock up biochemically, structurally, and obviously emotionally. And at that point, whatever that trigger is, it could be any trigger. It could be a sound. It could be a light. It could be anything. It could be a thought that you have where nothing outside happened. And when you have that in your body will shut down. I mean, it will do almost anything to just survive. And I think of it as a pure survival mode. Unfortunately, and I don't want anyone to start thinking they're stuck, because you can retrain yourself, but people that have had sexual assault or any kind of assault have this. And that's why when other people are doubting their memories, and it's like, why can't you remember something? It's because everything froze at that moment, everything. And it doesn't have to be that kind of assault. It could just be you fell down, hurt yourself really badly, and nobody was there for you. So it doesn't have to be a horrible thing, but people don't realize that that just paralyzes the entire body. And then it creates this sort of pattern that's locked in. And whatever fires it off, it literally, when we do something called IRT, injury recall technique in AK, we actually take people back and we look at whether they were inhaling or exhaling, whether their eyes were, where were their eyes focused, were they near, were they far. You use a clock and you say, okay, was it 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 5 o'clock? And then we have them put their body in the position and then we unwind it from their nervous system because it is programmed in there. And sometimes it only happens. So let's say you have a car accident. And you hear the horn screech, hear the horn beeping, and your eyes are looking up to the right to look at your rearview mirror when you get hit. The only way to unwind that is get the person into position with their hands on a fake steering wheel, have their eyes up to the right, have them go through inhale, exhale, and you figure out what locked their system up. And when you do, you can unwind that so that it's not in there sort of permanently, because it could happen anytime they're driving and hear another horn. It could happen when they're stopped at a stop sign. It could happen, you know, when their cat makes a sound, their dog makes a sound. So it's locked in at a very core level, and it needs to be unwound so people don't have these frozen places in their life.
That's really interesting, and it makes perfect sense. And, you know, I think that could be a little overwhelming for people that feel like they don't have access to that kind of care. You know, there's EMDR. I know a lot of people do really well with that. But in the situation where you're triggered, okay, let's go back to the triggered to the stuff in the world, it's daily assault, and I'm using that word. So it has to be a daily practice, a moment-to-moment practice of I'm okay. That's why something like tapping is really powerful. It's like, even though I'm reacting and I feel horrible and I'm so angry right now that, you know, my sister brought over perfume, whatever, even though I'm so angry, I completely love and accept myself. So it's that same how to calm the nervous system to say that we're safe now. And, you know, Dr. Klinghardt, I said to him, like, I'm a detector. Like, I can detect when there's mold. I detected it in a seminar once, and they said, no, we don't have it. I said, no, I'm really feeling mold. It's in my joint. I'm telling you, I'm having all the symptoms. And I said, no, sorry, we don't have that. And a week later, they came up to me and said, how did you do that? They found mold in all the vents. So we are detectors. And what Klinghardt calls it, he says it's your energetic immune system. So you've been exposed to something, right? So you've been I can feel viruses. I can feel them when I'm in a crowd. So when you've been exposed to something, you can be highly tuned, know it's there, and then take the appropriate steps. So if we look at it as a gift, we're the early warning signs, and we can take care of ourselves instead of like we're these little victims in this big, scary world.
Well, I'm going to do another positive spin on it. If I had a healthy child, a really healthy child, raised well, good food, all that. If you give them a cigarette to smoke, their body will react immediately. They'll cough, they'll get a headache, they'll feel terrible. You give them a shot of whiskey, they're going to cough, their body's going to try and push it out. That's what the body wants to do, is exudate, get rid of that thing. But most of us have been sedated. We're like, you know, the whole concept of you take the frog and put it in a pot, you drop it in a pot of boiling water and it jumps out. But what happens when you put the frog in the water and slowly, ever so slowly, turn it up? It cooks to death. Well, when we start to get healthy again, we get around cigarette smoke, we get around some toxin, and our body says immediately, this is not good.
Yeah.
When I walk, I haven't had coffee in over 40 years. When I walk past the coffee place, my nose, my eyes get irritated. If I walk in those places, I immediately am irritated because it's really caustic. But people that are around coffee all the time don't even feel that. But I'm never around coffee, ever. It's not in my house. So
okay, wait a second. I'm going to have to argue that one. Coffee, the smell of it, for some
people that like it, it works. But it's
gorgeous.
Irritating to my eyes.
Okay, so you had an effect with it. So that's what's so interesting, because it's always going to be different things for different people. But you have the signaling, which is, it's so,
my body tells me.
Right. And it's so exciting, you know, with the EMF situation. When I finally got the validation from this professional, and the numbers are, you know, healthy is 100 and I'm at almost 8,000. My husband was like, huh, okay. And I said, yeah, well, weight gain and high blood pressure and trouble sleeping, people start perking up a little bit. And I think the everyday person, we tend to sometimes call them muggles. That's Dieter says that the more belligerent people that are not feeling, unfortunately, they don't feel, and then they, like you said, the slow cook. So this is to, what we're trying to say here is this is to be celebrated. You're not a victim. You're gifted, and you can heal. And the main thing I want everyone to leave with is start where you are, do what you can. You don't have to go to the desert today. You know, I have a friend who did that, and there's other variables happening. And if that works for you, then that's great. But for me, high winds and the idea of insects, you know, it's like,
oh my God, no.
We all
no,
for real.
Oh my God.
Not insects.
Oh my God.
No.
Yeah, like camping, no, that doesn't, but maybe car camping. I'm not saying I wouldn't do that. I actually bought a small SUV a few months ago just in case I needed to sleep in it. So yes, this
and
is exciting.
You've got to learn to do. You got to learn to do Jewish camping. That was at Sonoma, Michigan, and I had to go
Sonoma,
from the second
Michigan.
Floor all the way down to the main floor to get a massage. That's Jewish camping.
That is so funny. And then, like, the buffet and the food.
Oh my God! Do you know how much work? I thought they'd bring it to my room. I mean, why did I have to go anywhere? That's Jewish camping.
It's so funny. I'm on board with that. You know, I will say too that this is an important point. As soon as you get away from, I think we tend to get really accustomed to pain. I know I do. I've lived in this apartment. I'm a homebody, and I feel horrible in here. I can't think. My scalp burns. And now I know why. So when I've just been avoiding, you know, the locations in my house that are bad. I've been avoiding the cell phone. I went and stayed at a friend's Airbnb in the woods, and it was zero EMFs, and it was completely life-changing. And then I came home, and it was 10 times worse, right? Because you now know the difference. So I would really encourage people to take cell phone breaks. And it's not to say that we're not going to get back to these things. It's just while we're rebuilding, it's really important to avoid as much as you can. And I want to just leave you with a few things here. Some of the things I'm doing to manage this EMF sensitivity. I mean, it's gotten really bad, but I've had a few things that are just absolutely, Mark, I haven't talked to you about this, is the chaga mushrooms.
Oh yeah, they'll help.
I started this chaga tea from an Ayurvedic practitioner, and it was the difference of, let's say everything was burning and I couldn't see straight, and I drank that tea and it was immediate. It was absolutely immediate, because it's super high in antioxidants. And what we're understanding about EMF exposure is it's not thermal radiation. It's Mercola put this whole thing out about it, but it causes the cells to fill up with calcium. And so what happens, it bonds with what happens is an excessive amount of free radicals at once, and that exposure all day. So antioxidants, really important. Chaga has so many other benefits. Also, lion's mane. I've been having a lot of problems with my brain and word recall, and that's really helpful. So I would just go for literally all the mushrooms. They've always been used in treatments for radiation, right? I'm getting back on some good fats in a slow manner. Fats, we'll talk more in this session about fats, but you have to be able to be breaking them down. Your gallbladder has to be in decent shape, and there's ways to get it there. But good fats, right, for the myelin sheath, that's one of the things that, you know, Klinghart talks about. The myelin sheath is the insulation around your electrical wiring, right? So when, just imagine like a wire without the plastic around it, it's just fried and it's a live wire. So good fats, right? Right, Mark? DHA, all the stuff we talked about, tissue remodeling through vegetables and fruit and all the good minerals, really important. And I'm going kind of fast here. Obviously, grounding is so huge. I cannot wait for it to stop raining, just to go sit in the trees. And another thing that I've heard really helps people with chemical sensitivity and EMF hypersensitivity is Patricia Cain's phospholipid IV therapy. But Mark, on that, you know, you can start that at home, with the good fats. Right, she's using a phospholipid IV.
Yeah, but there's many ways to do all this when you don't have the kind of money to get that kind of therapy.
That's right. So again, start where you are, do what you can. I'm feeling like, did we answer all the questions? Let's see. Mark, when you looked in there, was there anything in particular that stood out?
Nope. I think one way or another, we've given the parameters what they need to do to get good results.
Someone's saying if they've used, I can't really make this out.
Which one is it?
They use cortisone, hormone creams. Okay. Well, with the hormone creams.
It's the long one with the hormone creams.
Yeah, if you're using Cortef, she said cream, not the Cortef, which is the...
But the problem is with those kind of questions, we don't know how long they've been doing it. We don't know what other variables are going on. That's why I think.
But all these.
I'm gonna put in a plug. Food will never cause you a problem unless, of course, you have an allergy to the food. So eat the healthy fit. That's why your program works. That's why I tell people, instead of paying me a lot of money, do the basic program again and again and again. Get those pieces in place, because by the time you start messing with hormones, you do any of that stuff, you will need a professional. There is no way we can tell anyone what they need to do without having a lot of history. You don't need a professional to have an avocado. You don't need a professional to have your date drink. You don't need a professional to be eliminating and sweating. And you can get good results with that. You can get great results with that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's actually quite a few questions about EMFs and hypersensitivity. Really glad we talked about that. She's asking, can it increase pain? Yes, 100%.
Of course. You just
again, it's you become conductive with heavy metals, and even just toxicity, you become more more conductive because your myelin sheath tends to be affected and diminished.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's asking about caffeine. Ruth, we'll go into that. I know you're in the program. We'll talk about caffeine and coffee. In the fall and winter, we celebrate drinking coffee if it works for you, a small amount. In the spring, we take a break from coffee, and we have a whole way of weaning off coffee, which when it's sunny out and you have the outdoors to fill you for energy, it's much easier. So we'll do that in the spring session. Someone said, I'm particularly interested in, quote, why we become so sensitive to the modern world. Okay, Catherine, I hope we answered that. Someone said, exhausted, not sleeping well, and hypersensitive. I will say, it's like completely night and day to get yourself into a low EMF environment. I mean, the first time in so many years I've slept through the night. And for me, sleeping through the night, that's like 5 hours, but it's big. So I would really, really, Joanna, really recommend that you look into that as a top line. So good. We really covered all of it. 122. Thank you both for being here. Thank you, everyone. I think I got some adrenaline to get on this call. I was barely functional last night. So thank God we have the program, and I'm going to go back and drink my Beelers and settle in and replenish. Oh, Brent, right. We should remind them, if you are not in the program, you can still join us. You own
yeah.
the program. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
We go.
Yeah. So some of you who haven't been with us, maybe you haven't been with the session at all, this could be your first seasonal program with us. Maybe you've done other seasonal programs. This is another one to add to the group. Come join us. This is awesome stuff. I mean, you heard it, Dana and Mark right there. It's amazing information. They you know, well, get deep into the details, but also, you know, giving us the information we need to really put that information into action, as Dana says. So you can get the emails, you know, limelesslivemore.com/winter is the registration page for those of you not in yet. And those of you already in it, hey, you know, thanks for being here. We're going to have a good time the next, what, 3 weeks?
Three weeks.
That's right. Live Facebook group. We got a lot more calls and tons of cool information on the site. So this is good times, good stuff. Got to love it.
Right. And you got to love it. And you remember, you do own this information, so it's at your pace. You always start at the beginning and, you know, do whatever you can. I will say, just because we're talking about the EMF thing, you know, people are concerned about Facebook. Please, you know, you don't have to be on Facebook. I highly recommend it because it is a great interactive group. There are a lot of questions answered there, but that's why we have these calls. But I would recommend, again, try to do your calls on Skype and hardwire your computer for Facebook. And it's all yummy from there.
Right.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Mark.
Thank
We're gonna
you,
have
Dana.
Another.
Thank you, Brent.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mark.
So
Thank
awesome.
You.
How cute are we? We're still going, and I love you all. I love you. Oh, our beautiful core group. You know, I can't wait to hug all of you and get on a retreat because you've been with us all these years, and it just goes to show that, you know, even if you're getting well, you need to we need to revisit these things seasonally. So how fun, how great to have you. And we'll see you inside. We'll do another call with Mark very soon. Bye, you guys.
Absolutely.
Have a great day.
All right.
Bye, everyone.
Okay.
Bye. Thank you.